We appreciate your eagerness. Everybody here was 2 or 3 minutes ahead of time this morning, ready to go. I would be greatly discouraged if it were not for the prospect of learning a great deal from you. So this is going to be a time of learning from one another. You've perhaps heard the story about the college in their routine questionnaire for students seeking admission. They asked the question, do you feel that you are a leader? Well, you know how most of them answered that. One of the parents got when they got a letter back from the college in there, the registrar had written a special little note and said, we certainly appreciate the frankness of your son in answering our questionnaire. And you also may be surprised to know that he's going to be the only follower among 369 leaders. So 368 out of 369 felt that they were leaders. Now, I don't know how we're going to make out whether we have any followers in this group or not. Down at the Wycliffe Jungle Camp, I heard one of the incidents that took place down there where the leaders divided all of the recruits into three groups. And they grouped them. They put those who had the least leadership potential, those who were medium, and then those who were the top into groups, and then set them out building a raft. And they had to build a raft. Of course, it would take them down the river. They'd never divided them up like this before. Well, the people that had the least leadership got theirs built first. The medium got theirs next, and the leadership group never did get a raft built. So it takes a mixture, doesn't it, to get things done? Now, right at the outset, and you're going to need to use your pencil, paper quite a bit, I'd like to take about 2 or 3 minutes and have you write down, and then we're going to refer back to it later, what you had hoped to gain from these sessions. Now, you must have had a reason for signing up for this group. Now, right now, just while it's fresh in your mind, would you just write down what you had in mind, what you expected to get out of these sessions? And we're going to use this to make up the agenda. And I'm going to give you a few suggestions, just some things we might discuss. I came prepared with an armful of material. And incidentally, these things I'm going to flash in front of you, I'm going to pass some of them out. And in the sessions, both tomorrow and the next day, we're going to have some about 3-minute reports from some of you. So stand by on that. How'd you like to take this up? You can't see it over there, huh? What does it say? Oh, it's not very big, this one. Keep your memory young. This one says, you can get your ideas across. This one is, put power in words. Hear and be heard. How to simplify a problem. Eight tests spot initiative. How to pick your successor. Eight steps to better training. Build the will to work. You can be a better leader. I'm not done yet. How to weigh ideas. When to use the needle. We speak of that as exhortation in our circles. New ways to stretch time. Identify your creative people. how to say what you mean. How to enjoy your job. 8 skills make a manager. Making leadership effective. Shall I go on? Wanted now, these executive traits. Get full use of ideas. 8 keys to creativity. Where to find action getters. You can measure morale. Tap hidden talent 3 ways. I like this one. How to teach young men to work. How to build self-confidence. Here's a better way to size up men. How to do it now. You can get better decisions. Exercise your imagination. Understand what you hear. Your people are copying you. Good leaders do these things. Did I have that up before? How to stay on top of your job. Sharpen your logic. How to make a business decision. Now, these are a few things that we can talk about as we generally are going to concentrate on techniques of leadership. But we're going to spend the first half of this session this morning in some background material and together try to arrive at some conclusions and working definitions as a matter of background and a frame of reference. So the first thing we want to take up is a definition of leadership. And I don't think we'll agree on this, but maybe we can come out with the least common denominator. So I'm going to suggest one here to kick off with, then we'll come down with something simple. But here's one I read in a book, a definition. It is the activity of influencing people towards some goal which they come to find desirable or necessary. The activity of influencing people towards some goal which they come to find desirable or necessary. The Dartnell Corporation has put out some extracts from J.C. Penney's book. And J.C. Penney is a man who is considered in most circles to be a Christian. And he's written a book called, 50 Years or 70 Years with the Golden Rule. 50 Years with the Golden Rule, it is. And here's a little pamphlet that is that excerpts from this book. It's called What an Executive Should Know About Himself. And in talking about leadership, he defines leadership simply as this: getting things done through other people. We can't be much more basic or simple than that. Now, I would like to provide one of my own, and then we'll discuss this for a minute. After having studied and listened to other people for a few years, I've come to the conclusion that leadership is simply accomplishing your objectives utilizing the efforts of others. Accomplishing your objectives, utilizing the efforts of others. J.C. Penney's is a little simpler, isn't it? It's getting things done through other people. All right, what is your definition? Now, these are going to be discussion sessions here these three mornings. Do you agree with the general consensus, these definitions, that that's what leadership is? Now, there's one thing that, or two or three things that are common to all three of these definitions. What are they? Some of the things that are common. What's one of them?
Other people.
This is common to all of them, that leadership involves influencing and utilizing other people. All right, that very definitely is common to all three definitions. Anything else that was common to all three of them? What's that? Yes. This is certainly indicated in all of these that there's an objective, a purpose, something to get done utilizing the efforts of others. Does this assume, and properly assume, that there are people that have things to accomplish that they could never get done just by themselves? All right. Then leadership becomes necessary, or perhaps I should say the leadership of a group becomes necessary when that a person is going full blast on all 16 cylinders, and yet the God-given objectives that this person has are not being accomplished. Then he has to resort to leadership of other people to get his objectives accomplished, doesn't he? Is there anything else that was common to these definitions?
Production.
All right, production. Well, which of these three can we adopt as a point of reference now? When we're talking about leadership just for these 3 days, this is what we're talking about. Jack, what do you think? Okay. Does anybody want to summarize or make one definition out of these three?
How to understand other people in order to accomplish an objective.
Beg your pardon?
How to understand other people in order
to accomplish an objective. How to understand other people. Somebody else want to put something together here? Well, we probably can't all agree on the wording, but are we agreed on the general idea that it starts with a person who has an objective to be accomplished? And he can't accomplish this objective simply through his own efforts. Therefore, he has to utilize the efforts and the resources of other people to do it, which means that he's going to have to do a lot of things. And we'll go into some detail with some of these pamphlets I had up here on how you do this. So this is what we're going to consider, as I said, primarily, is the techniques of accomplishing your objective, utilizing the efforts of other people. Is that all right? Is that a worthy goal? Now, a little bit I'm going to have you read what you have down here. But with a tentative definition here, now we want to proceed into one other idea in this general, in the general philosophy of leadership. And this is, just to introduce this, traits. Now, if you've ever read a book on leadership, you can find some, 15 or 18 traits or qualities of a good leader. Perhaps you could name some of them. What are some of them? Pete?
Know your job, know yourself, and seek self-improvement. Know your men, look out for their welfare. Keep your men informed, set the example, ensure the task is understood, supervised, and accomplished. Train your men as a team, make sound and timely decisions. Seek responsibility and develop a sense of responsibility among your subordinates. Employ your command according to its capabilities, and take responsibility for your actions following up. That's the other person.
Yes. Now, I used the wrong word here. The word that I wanted was qualities.
Initiative.
All right. Initiative. It's generally what we think is being one. Something else?
Dependability.
All right. Dependability.
Communication.
Communication.
Imagination.
Keep them coming.
What?
Imagination?
Flexibility?
Availability? Consistency.
What was that?
Consistency. Humility.
Humility?
Dependability.
I think we had that in before.
Are we talking about a Christian leader now, or just a plain leader?
Well, I tell you, this is going to be probably one of the most unspiritual sessions that you ever sit in. So we expect before the time is up to kind of get to Christian things, but now we're pretty far afield. Anything else you want to mention?
I have a list here.
You have a list? Well, just take one at a time. All right, open mind. Now that's enough for on that.
Wholesome mind.
Wholesome mind. All right, we've talked about qualities and traits. This concept of describing a leader in the terms of personal qualities has been completely abandoned. And you could have a person that had everything you've mentioned and everything on your list, Ray, and he would not be a leader. For many, many years, people have tried to define leadership in terms, if a man has this and this and this, he'll be a leader. Well, that was a dirty trick, wasn't it? Get all these things on the line. This man may be a potential leader that has all these things, and they're nice, but the possession of these things does not indicate that he has any leadership ability. What then is the way that we establish leadership? Now, Pete, I'm going to go into another section of the Air Force's stuff here. We'll probably come back to yours in a minute. But the Air Force asks two questions to find out whether a man is a leader or not. And the first one is, the first question, did he accomplish his objective? And maybe they could make out 10 sheets of all of his fine personal qualities. What a great person he was. But did he accomplish his objective? And the second is, the second question, did he effectively utilize all available resources in accomplishing his objective? Now, why is this last question in there? A man might accomplish his objective and only use a third of his resources and get kind of a one-sided victory. But if he's going to be entrusted with greater resources, he has to demonstrate that he can effectively utilize what he has now. Well, do you have any comments or reaction to the traits versus the accomplishment concept of leadership? You can't tell whether a person is a leader or not by just analyzing his character and his qualities. We have an awful lot of fine people who are potential leaders, but who in effect have never accomplished an objective. Now, I want to read further on this, and I'm going to read extensively in here, and you can't follow all this, but there might be some just statement or two you pick out of it. And I'm going to do a lot of reading this week from other people's things. This came out of a study that was made at West Point. And this is along the same line we're talking now. Until World War II, research and leadership had been concerned primarily with studying the personalities of leaders. It was thought that the leader's personal characteristics that made them different from their followers and enabled them to become leaders. It was further thought that men who did not have these characteristics could not generally become successful leaders. A large amount of research was done in an attempt to identify those personality characteristics and to discover how they enabled men to become successful leaders. Now, that's a conventional approach, isn't it? You find somebody as a great leader, so you define, you list his, analyze his personality traits, and then you conclude, okay, this is what made him a great leader. Now, if we can find somebody else that if we can develop these same personality traits in, he will be a great leader. Is that logical? However, these research efforts turned out largely to be fruitless. It gradually appeared evident that personality characteristics could not be used to distinguish the leader from the non-leader. Okay, we together so far? There were several reasons for this. Some followers usually possessed the same personality characteristics their leader possessed to a small or even greater degree. Second, personality characteristics found for leaders in one situation were not necessarily found for leaders in another situation. Three, with the same kind of leadership situation, leaders differed from one another in many important respects, even to a greater degree than they differed from their followers. Now, what did we say in those three statements along this matter of personality characteristics? You take a leader, list all of his personality characteristics, and his followers, many of them, had the same, and some in a greater degree than he did, and yet they weren't leaders. Now, that was the first statement made. The second one here, to review it, the personality characteristics of a leader in one situation were completely absent from a leader in another situation. And third, and really this seems like it's closely related to the second, that leaders differ more one from another than they do from their followers. So this personality characteristics is not a valid way to determine or to develop leadership. Well, I hope we find out what it is before the week's out. Now, the conclusion of this study made at West Point. After some further studies were made, it became clear that a leader's success depends not nearly so much on his personality characteristics as on the bent to which his action facilitates the attainment of the group goals. Did you get that statement?
No.
Read it again here. A leader's success depends not nearly so much on his personality characteristics as on the bent to which his action facilitates the attainment of the group goals. It's action that he takes. Isn't that what this said? Thus, if the leader's actions help the group to achieve its goals, his influence within the group was great, and he was judged to be a good leader. If the leader's actions did not help in the achieving of group goals, his influence decreased, and he was judged to be a poor leader. If the group was free to reject his leadership, it usually did in these experiments. Now, what did we just say? Somebody repeat it back.
I think we just said that leadership consists in guiding and accomplishing group goals.
Yes, and if the man who could do this make a great contribution to this, he was considered by his followers as being a good leader. And if he couldn't, he was a poor leader. And if they had the option, what did they do? Toss him out. Okay. Further here. This concept of leadership and the leadership process clearly has far-reaching implications for leadership training. We would agree with that, wouldn't we? It indicates that the same kind or style of leadership will not be equally effective in different kind of situations, in that the leader, to be effective, must learn to pattern his actions to the demand of the situation. Okay. Now, let me read another paragraph here. Is this, are we communicating? Okay. Causes for ineffective leadership. There are many different specific reasons why men are not effective leaders. Just as there are many different reasons why men are effective leaders. Some ineffective leaders are uncertain. Some are indifferent to the welfare of their men. Still others are overly concerned with their men. To these weaknesses could be added many others. The important question is whether, in a study of these weaknesses, there lies a key to understanding the basis for these various kinds of failure. Is there some underlying reason why leaders are not effective? Here are the following reasons, and there's only two of them, for failure. An inability to analyze the situation that confronts him so that he is unable to arrive at the appropriate course of action. Now, if you had to put this in three words and turn it around to the positive, what is the first thing that leaders got to do? Analyze the situation. That's it. Now, the second cause of failure, an inability to implement the appropriate action once it has been identified to an accurate analysis of the situation. In other words, having analyzed the situation, know what to do. Here was the guy, he knew the problem, but he didn't know what to do about it. Now, I don't know whether you agree with this or not. We could have as many opinions as we have books on the subject, I'm sure. But what we've said then, as we abandoned the personality characteristics, we're coming over to the leader. Now, let's repeat this so we'll be sure to get it. He's got to do two things to be successful. What's the first one? Analyze the situation, the problem. And second? I think I probably watered this down a little bit. I said, know what to do, but that isn't it, is it? what you said is to do it, yes. To know what to do and to do it. Analyze it. Get into action on it. All right. Well, we're just fooling around in the background here. This morning, some of the background philosophy. As I said, we're going to throw all this overboard in a little bit and get into some techniques for doing these things. Now, just another area of leadership. I consider that there are two types of leaders. And I looked this word up in the dictionary, so I think it's a good one. And it means almost what I thought it meant. And I'm not even sure I can pronounce it right. But the first kind is authoritarian leadership. And the way the dictionary says it's spelled, I had it wrong, was A-U-T-H-O-R-I-T-A-R-I-A-N. This is the kind of leadership that those of us who have been in the military, have been subjected to. Authoritarian leadership. Now, what does this mean? Does Russia have some good leadership? What do you think? Do you think Khrushchev is a good leader? Do you think Adolf Hitler was a good leader? Have they accomplished their mission? Well, Hitler went a long ways to it. He mobilized the nation, and he got pretty close, didn't he? And Khrushchev, well, how about Castro? Would you call him a successful leader? Fidel. What do you think? Has he accomplished his mission? Is he in control of the situation down there? Well, I see we have a difference of opinion here. Are these people we've just talked about, are the great majority of the people in their nation willing followers? They are authoritarian leaders. Pete, I don't know whether you'd agree with me or not. Some of you other fellows in the military. Have you ever been subjected to that kind of leadership? That if a guy didn't have the rank that he had, why, his wife and kids probably wouldn't even mind him. And of course, in the military, generally, when we see some real obnoxious military officer, we generally say his wife must really give him a bad time at home. The other kind of leader is personal. An authoritarian leader and a personal leader.
Personal?
Yes, personal. Now, the President of the United States, which kind of a leader is he?
Combination.
All right, if he does not have personal leadership, what's going to happen in the next election? What's going to happen? He'll get defeated. Now, right now, while he's in power, there are certain areas that he has jurisdiction over. How about Fidel Castro? Is he willing to hold an election?
No.
Then what kind of a leader is he? Okay. But our president is a combination of both. But largely, his future depends on his degree of personal leadership. Does it not? How long he stays in power, if he can't get the people with him, he can't. Now, getting a little closer to the Christian concept of leadership. Are there any religious organizations that have authoritarian leadership? You think they exist? But generally, the kind of leadership to which we are willing to subject ourselves and to which we aspire is what kind of leadership? Personal leadership. Which means that any followers that we have are those it's voluntary and not because we have been invested with any authority. Now I want to read some comments on this matter of personal leadership. Speaking of authoritarian, I wish I could say that word, leadership, the former is an exercise of power over people. Is that right? The second is the use and creation of power with people. Use people to create power. The former is interested solely in the result. The latter is equally concerned about the process of securing the result. Now, I don't think you can copy what I'm going to give you here, so just listen to it. The former is but virtue of position, is by virtue of position, and may never become a personal leader. The latter is almost inevitably bound to be thrust in a position of command or administrative leadership. So the guy who has personal leadership, he's going to gravitate, and the other, he can't help it. But this is not the way he got there. The followers of a true leader secure the satisfaction and sense of the attainment of maturity of their heart's desires. Right? Personal leadership is known by the personalities it enriches. The proof of qualitative leadership is the qualitative growth of the led as individuals. Now, this is personal leadership we're talking about. There's one person who had both of these, authoritarian and personal leadership. Well, somebody read Isaiah 55:4.
Behold, I have given him for a witness to the people, a leader and commander of the people.
Okay. What was Christ's twofold position, according to Isaiah 55:4? A leader and a commander. So, the person, as we said, who possesses personal leadership will very often gravitate into a position of authoritarian leadership. But his leadership isn't dependent upon the authority that he's been given by those who appointed him. It starts with personality. All right? You want to kick that around a little bit? Are we making progress here?
Could we identify some well-known people that would fit this description?
Well, you're right with me. The next question I want to ask, bring that out. Now, I hope you won't be reluctant to participate in what I'm going to ask you right now. If you had your choice of meeting an hour every other week for the next year, with any person in the world who would you choose? Now write their name down on a piece of paper in front of you. If you had the privilege of an hour every other week for the next year with any person in the world, sort of man-to-man situation, you know, where you could ask questions and answer, and you know that this person would give you his or her full time for 1 hour every other week for a year, whom would you choose? Yes, excluding the Lord. Not necessarily. If you want to project yourself back a few generations, you do that. Now, as soon as you've got the name written down, why, look up. Look up at me. Never thought about that, huh? This is a real clue to your own character, what you aspire to be like, and your own evaluation of what is great, what's great to possess. Well, now I'm going to ask a few of you, we won't go all the way around, to tell us whose name you wrote down and why. And this shouldn't be embarrassing, I don't think. Now, I will tell you, just to kick this off, the person that I would choose if I had this privilege. Is that all right? Maybe some of you chose the same one. I would choose Billy Graham. And the reason I would choose Billy Graham is because that I believe that God has anointed him in an unusual way. He possesses humility, wisdom, and just a lot of these things that I feel if they could rub off on me, then I would be a better servant of the Lord. So if I had about 26 hours with him in the next year, I think something would rub off. I've got a lot of questions that I would ask him. Now, you see, this reveals kind of what I feel the attributes of a great leader are, and also what I need. Now, who did you write down? How many of you wrote down Billy Graham? Now, without any embarrassment, can you tell if this is too personal? We don't want to dig it out of you, but who did you write down? Okay?
Wrote down Abraham Lincoln.
Abraham Lincoln. Okay, and why?
I felt that he was a godly man, and also that he accomplished his objective, kept his eyes on the objective, and had tremendous courage, moral courage. During the war, he was very unpopular. And yet, he kept his eyes.
Can you hear him over there?
He kept his eyes on his objective.
Okay, Marion?
Since we started this thing on spiritual places, I'd like to spend some time with Mr. Robert McNamara. He was Secretary of Defense. And the reason I would like to do so is because I feel that he has brought about so far a very unusual achievement. He has utilized modern techniques. He's worked in some extremely difficult situations. But he has carried his point and he's stuck with the principles with which he started.
Okay, and historians will evaluate his leadership. All right, Marion. Someone else. Marv?
I chose Martin Luther. He was a man who had the courage of his convictions in the face of accomplished his goals, I believe. Some of them may question how, to what extent, but he certainly went a long way toward changing things.
Okay. Now, what are your girls? Right. Okay, the Apostle Paul. Someone else.
I chose Charles de Gaulle. Friend. I'm ashamed of that after hearing what you said. But nevertheless, he has, through his personality and through his sense of timing, brought about stability to a nation who, in years past, have been nothing but a second-rate nation. Today, they command respect from every nation because of his sense of timing, because of his willingness to step down into the background and wait for the appropriate moment to come forth, and because of many personal strong traits that I lack, I admire his leadership.
Would you evaluate his leadership being primarily authoritarian or personal?
He has he started as a personal leader, but it has changed considerably to often. Well, I can't say this.
Yes, he exercises, however, I think I would agree with you that his is a personal leadership, because the minute the majority of the people of France do not want him, he doesn't want to be their leader. No. He also is a man of great wit. I think we need something a little lighter here occasionally. In a parade he was in one day, one of the demonstrators who didn't approve of him, I guess, shouted out, "Death to all fools." And de Gaulle turned around and he said, "A very ambitious project." Pete?
I selected the man who God picked for me to do just what he decided with 12 years ago. And because each one of us responds differently to different people, I will trust God's judgment.
Yes, and I'm glad that you brought in somebody. I thought perhaps somebody would just mention somebody that you're meeting with right at present. Because I think the Lord has probably brought the right person along to meet your present needs. So I expect maybe the reason some of you didn't speak up is because you thought it would be a little too personal. But it doesn't have to be some of these great people of the past or of the present. Now, I want to, as we come towards the close here, I'm going to give out some assignment, but one of them is going to be, I'm going to ask some of you, about five, to tell us. In fact, I think I was originally going to have a report on this, but I think I'll let everybody do some work on this. And that is, who do you think are the five greatest leaders of history, and why? You know, just write this down so you can read it in a sentence or two. And then secondly, who are the five greatest leaders in the Bible, and why do you so evaluate them? And we'll have a little discussion on that tomorrow. No, that'll be some of the ones that have been mentioned. Now, let's progress to another phase here. Let's see. We've been here for 55 minutes. Now, let's take a five-minute break. Then we'll come back till 10:30. Okay. What? Yeah, that was interesting, wasn't it? I thought somebody would choose Deborah or some of the rest of them. Now, these women really, well, now I give you your chance, you know, because the one you're meeting with is a great person. But chance is gone now. Now, to get down a little bit more, and we're really getting into this matter of techniques, the next step we want to do is to construct a prototype of a person who meets these qualifications, and we'll draw from many resources. Now, let me read a few here. This says number E, wait a minute here, and I'll get it out of an old notebook here. Okay, now don't try to copy this down. You can reduce it to one sentence after I'm through. Almost every study of the secret of the successful leader has agreed that the possession of a generous and unusual endowment of physical and nervous energy is essential. Okay, what did I just say? Okay. Now, we're talking about, we're lapsing back into personal characteristics again, aren't we? But we can't abandon this approach altogether. So what is it that every successful leader has possessed as we construct this prototype? Give it back, it's just reviewing. An unusual amount of physical and nervous energy. Somebody said drive. Okay. Those who rise in a marked way above the mass of men have conspicuously more drive, more sheer endurance, greater vigor of body and mind than the average. Now, this is due to three things. One, heredity. Two, upbringing and nurture. That's environment, isn't it? Heredity, environment. And the third, the conscious use or abuse of our physical organism from day to day. So with every favorable hereditary factor and every favorable environmental factor, we can still nullify our effectiveness through the conscious use or abuse of the physical organism. Is that right? In another book I have here that is not very spiritual, but I've enjoyed it. My note word in is here. One of the editors of Newsweek took a year's vacation and interviewed the executives of the top, the largest 100 corporations in the United States to try to find out what made them what they were. And he came up with some common denominators. And one of them was that every one of these guys had in common these top men, or most of them, he does qualify it, do share a common dynamism. Never heard of such a word. An optimism, a self-confidence, and a real hunger for work, which they could not satisfy even if they wanted to, which they don't. James, plainmaker James McDonald, translates it as vital balance. Now, if you aspire to be a great leader, then or you have somebody that you want to be a great leader, developing a great leader, can we conclude that whatever is necessary to do it, there's going to have to be generated a great deal of energy and bounce and drive. Is that right? Now, are there people that may be disqualified for this? Can a person who is physically crippled ever become a great leader? So physical energy is not the only thing. One of our heavyweight boxers, famous boxers of a few years back, and I don't think it's too widely known, but I believe it's true, if you check up on it, has 12-year-old intelligence. One of our great heavyweights. Probably he would never have gotten that position if he hadn't been well coordinated physically. In fact, he was just about the best coordinated physical specimen alive at the time, or he'd have never gotten to be the heavyweight. All right? Then great physical vigor and coordination alone won't do it. Or mental vigor. But the combination of these things. All right, let's go on to another. By the way, what is the key word to the book of Mark? Straight way. What does this mean? Was Christ a person of action? Straight way. This, that, and the other. I have a quotation here which says, the leader's show of energy releases energy. Is that right? Is enthusiasm contagious? Okay. Now, we have constructed one, I think I want to use the word attribute. Now we're going to number two. The leader is one who knows with greater than average strength of conviction what he wants to get done and where he wants to go. He's above average in what? He knows with greater than average strength of conviction what he wants to get done and where he wants to go. And you've heard this many times, I have forgotten who quoted it. The world stands aside to let pass the man who knows whither he is going. Is that right? A great Frenchman. Well, wait a minute, I'll read something else here first. This means he possesses clarity and precision as to the objective purpose and aims, his objective purposes and aims, which are definite, readily communicable to others, potentially attractive to others, and vigorously, can't read my writing here. I'll just skip it then. Oh, yeah, here it is, persistently. Vigorously, persistently, and enthusiastically sustained by the leader. And a French author, I don't know how you pronounce this, Balzois, I guess. He says, conviction brings a silent, indefinable beauty into faces made of the commonest clay. What translates the commonest clay face into a thing of beauty? What did I just say? Conviction. It is in the exercise of the will that the men are separated from the boys. Okay. Now, what have we constructed here so far? The person who distinguishes himself. Now, here's a guy, we don't want to abandon this other concept, who is in a situation, he can size it up, take the right action, lead people out. But he didn't get there by accident in that situation. Because he was a personal leader, he gravitated into this place of responsibility. Now, we're going to review here again. Now, what are the two things that the two attributes we've established here? What's the first one? Drive. If you want to put in one word, in the second? Conviction. Okay. Now, I want to pursue this from just a little different angle here. And I want to read some extracts from a chapter in a book called The Armed Forces Officer. And we don't want you people to think that we're being too military here. A lot of people don't understand that there's really not very many things that are original with the military. The military is charged with the greatest business in the world. And that is the security of our nation. Therefore, the military has got to have the right answers. The country will not be secure if the military does not come up with the right answers. The military people have unlimited, almost, resources. And do you know how the military solves most of their problems? They turn it over to the research department of a civilian university. There's very few universities in the United States that do not have a number of military projects. In fact, most of them, the research departments are, I don't want to give a figure I can't substantiate, but I would say that the great majority of their income is derived from military research projects. So there's very little that's original with the military. They've got to have an answer, and so they hire the research department of the best university in the country to give them an answer to their problem. They just give them the problem. And this book right here wasn't written by military people. It was a research project. So I'm not trying to impress military thought upon you. This is from a chapter called Mainsprings of Leadership. How do you like that title? The mainspring or the mainsprings of leadership. We've talked about a couple of them. Maybe that's what we ought to call those instead of attributes. Just call them mainsprings. The counselor says, be forthright, be articulate, be confident, be positive, possess a commanding appearance. The young man replies, all very good so far as it goes. I will if I can. But tell me, how do I get that way? It's a good question, isn't it? He sees rightly enough the main point that these things are but derivatives of other inner qualities that must be possessed. Now a couple of quotes. Whether or not a person becomes a great leader depends upon whether or not he possesses that extra initiative, magnetism, moral courage, and force which makes the difference between the average man and the above average. But we're back into our old rut again, aren't we? Personal characteristics. Well, we got to go deeper than that. The psychologists assure us, thank you, that there is a sound scientific basis for what enlightened military trainers have long held to be true. Now, this is a significant statement I'm about to give you. The first-class follower and the first-class leader are one and the same. They say that it is literally true, and their tests prove it. So, chemically, you look into a first-class follower and a first-class leader, you find the same thing. How do I get that way? Well, the start is being a good follower. This is where we generate from. Okay? But it does not follow that every man can be taught to lead. In the majority of men, success or failure is caused more by mental attitude than by mental capacity. Now we're back where we were again a while ago, with the drive and the conviction. All right. Many are unwilling to face the ordeal of thinking for themselves and of accepting responsibility for others. But the man determined to excel at his own work has already climbed the first rung of the ladder. In that process, he perforce learns to think for himself while setting an example of those who are around him. Out of application to work comes capacity for original and creative process. This book has a quote in here. It says, one of our nation's leaders. But I would say that whoever did the research on this didn't go far enough, because this came from Napoleon. And if one of our nation's great leader quoted it, said it, well, he didn't give credit. And I believe this can be traced back to Napoleon. There is no more valuable subordinate than the man to whom you can give a piece of work and then forget it, in the confident expectation that the next time it is brought to your attention, it will come in the form of a report that the thing has been done. Well, let me read one more thing here. It is therefore not an arbitrary standard for measuring leadership capacity in men that puts the ability to excel in assigned work above all else. The willingness and ability to strive and to do are best judged by what we see of men in action. If they are indifferent to assigned responsibilities, they are bad risks for larger ones, no matter how charming their personalities or what the record says about their prior experience and educational advantages. Either the proposition is both reasonable and sound, or Arnold Bennett was singing off key when he said, "I think fine this necessity for the tense bracing of the will before anything worthwhile can be done. It is the chief thing that distinguishes me from the cat by the fire." Now, the third attribute we are developing here, I think, has come out of this, or the third mainspring. I haven't got this clear in my mind yet. I think these are one, but I can't break them down. I have to break them down in two. A history of achievement. A history of achievement. Drive, conviction, a history of achievement. When David stood before Saul in great confidence, what did he say? He said, "While I was with the sheep, a lion came out." And he said, "I grabbed him by the whiskers." I know I'd have been grabbing the limbs on of a tree by the whiskers if that had been me. And he said, "A bear came out, and he rammed that shepherd's crook down his throat, too." And he said, "This uncircumcised Philistine shall be as one of these." But he didn't start with the giant, did he? We're talking about following. You see, the person who attains this position of leadership has gone step by step. And a great deal of this has been in followership. Complete job. Now, I said I think this all belongs to one, but I can't seem to get it in here. And that is, I can't use the right word. I'm just going to have to pick an inferior word out. And this is knowledge. Our equipment. How long did Moses go to college? You know what his college was? Well, I read a book once that gave some information. I don't know where they got it, but they said he went to the College of On. Now, in his day, a college education was different. To graduate, you had to complete all the courses offered by the university. Which means that he went through music. He knew all the languages of the day. He knew all that was known about medical science. He knew all that was known about history and government and military leadership. How about Paul? Did he have any background? Now, on the other hand, Acts 4:13. And when they saw that they were ignorant and unlearned men, they took knowledge of them that they had been with Jesus. God used some of these men on a tactical level, and they were leaders. But he used others on a strategic level. Did he not? Paul, through him came the doctrine of the church. Through Moses, the framework of this great period of history with commandments and so forth. So, we have, I think we better use the word equipment, hadn't we? Scratch the word knowledge, equipment. Because there is spiritual and mental equipment. Moses had both. I suppose this evaluation of Peter and the others as being ignorant and unlearned was referring primarily to formal ecclesiastical education, because Peter was not dumb. He apparently had a greater grasp on the Old Testament scripture, not only the words, but the meaning, than anybody in this room has today. Wouldn't you say? Well, we'll call this equipment then. Okay, how are we doing? We got four of them now. What are they? It's the first one? Second? Three? And four? Okay. Now the fifth one, and the last one that we're going to talk about, is, and again, you can see that I'm not satisfied with the words I've got written down in front of me. But a weak try will be human relations. Successful human relations. Now, can you think of a better word? Well, this is a word that's a good one. I'm thinking more of the ability. We're talking about influencing people. What I'd written down here was the energy and magnetism to form and direct a team. I think I've got a statement in here. In this book, I think I skipped it when I was reading here. He possesses magnetism. Yes, that was the word. If probably had to put it down in one word, that would be the word magnetism. Attract other people and hold them in orbit. That's a better word, isn't it? Okay, let's go back to that. I had it in the deal here. Were you going to Say something, Ray.
I was wondering if there wouldn't be a genuine concern for other people.
Yes, that's certainly, that's basic, isn't it, to that? But magnetism not only attracts, but it holds people in orbit. And actually, the magnet with the stuff around it can direct them too, can it? I hope we'll get to have a session on how to build. This is be a duplicate of some things we talked about last year, but how you build morale and fighting spirit in a band of men. That's in our notes for the future. Well, now is the time. I want to give you a 10-minute quiz at last year. Maybe better allow 15 for it. Now let's take about 3 minutes. Now, just real rapidly, several of you, what did you write down that you wanted to get out of this, these three sessions? One after another, just as fast as you can go here. Just read your top line.
To learn more about spiritual leadership, principles, methods, techniques, and qualities of the Christian
teacher. Okay, good. Now, real loud so everybody can hear. Next person, what'd you write down? Ned? Okay. I doubt if we'll get that one. What was that? Make a group into a band. Okay. Some of you girls. Doris? How to develop leadership policies, which we keep having a great conflict here, don't we? First thing, we say there is no such thing. And then we lapse right back into them, don't we? All right. Somebody else. How to get people to accept responsibility. Okay? Now, I haven't got anything in mind for the next two sessions. So I'm wide open here. I've got a lot of material, but I haven't got it sorted out. Okay? What else?
To learn how to develop and lead a group of guys whose vision is to produce a role in society.
Okay. I would say with General de Gaulle, that's a very worthy ambition. Would you remind us of that, Teed, and we'll keep after that. Now, that's the theme we should be concentrating on.
One, how to assume leadership responsibilities in an area most effectively or to assist leadership. And two, those attributes and skills to be considered and applied regarding between teaching and training.
Okay. I tell you what I'd like you to do during the coffee break. If we don't get to it before, just write on a separate sheet of paper, separate from your notes if it isn't. Some of these things that you would like for us to really bear down on and hand it to me during coffee break, or stick it in my pocket, will you? I got to burn the midnight oil tonight because I only prepared for one session, because what we're going to do is dependent. I've said you make up the agenda. And you can see that I've got a lot of material. Now, if you want to look over some of this material I've got up here, I didn't even show you one of them here. This is a great... I think Rod Sargent is going to be speaking on this, but he and I talked about what we were going to... I wanted to know what he was going to cover so we wouldn't duplicate, and we finally came to the conclusion that a little review wouldn't help. So I'm going to ignore the fact that he's on the program, and he's going to ignore the fact that I'm on it. How to organize your time. How to stimulate successful ideas. You'd like to get into this one? Rod's going to lecture the whole group on it. Now, I want to take up, in this last time, a little quiz that I'm going to give you. And talking about just one of the things that a leader has to develop. And that is judgment. If we have time, we'll go into the 8 principles of war. Well, I'll just read them to you. Maintenance of the objective, offensive action, security, economy of force, cooperation, mobility, surprise, and pursuit. Now, you'd think that a great general would have to know a lot more than that, wouldn't you? But an analysis of the military campaigns of history have shown that the military leader who exercised these 8 things in the greatest battles defeated the person who didn't, who was inferior to him. So this was largely a matter of being able to analyze the situation and take the correct action. We generally refer to this as judgment, don't we? Now, on the matter of judgment, if a person is emotionally stable, and, I'll just stop there. Emotionally stable and in good health, one person's judgment is as good as another, because judgment, I have a cartoon on my desk under the glass that I keep there to remind me. It says, a man's judgment is no better than his information. If my judgment is better than somebody else's judgment, it's probably because that I have more information than he has. That's all. And incidentally, the Lord's leading, to a large extent, is dependent upon knowledge. I often point out William Carey went to India, became the father of modern missions, not because of a revelation or a call he had, but he read in the newspaper the report of Captain Cook's sailors. The information came to him that way, and he got a burden to go to India. That's the way he got his revelation, through information. Well, the concluding thing we're going to do here this morning is to test your judgment. I'm going to let you grade yourself on this. I'm going to write 4 sentences on the board, and I'm going to ask you 11 questions, and you write down whether true or false, or you don't know.